I'm on the line now from the Rotorua Island, New Zealand. The Rotorua Island ecologist, Joe Ritchie, is joining us. Good morning, Joe. So, Joe, you're the Rotorua Island ecologist who's kind of, I guess, in charge of some of the restoration work out there on the island. As we know, the island was, in fact, in 1911, opened by the Salvation Army as a rehabilitation facility for alcoholics, and had a very proud history of that, serving over 12,000 New Zealanders in that capacity right through until the Salvation Army left the island in 2005, and it's now managed by the Rotorua Island New Zealand Trust. Joe, 2005 is now 14 years ago, so that's an incredibly long time, and you guys have had some amazing success out there. Is it right, though, that in 2013, when the last mammalian predators were eradicated, that was when the real restoration was possible?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, I guess that the Rotorua Island Trust really got going around 2008, 2009, when we started planting. So yeah, there were 20,000 pine trees that were removed from the island, and we embarked on a planting program with help from Boffa Miskell, and that really sort of signalled the start of restoring the island. So wow, we planted 50 hectares out of 80 hectares.
So 5/8 of the island are now planted.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, sort of in coastal, in coastal species dominated by Pohutukawa.
Yeah, yeah, and so, but it's not if you like a remote and experience for visitors, is it? So much as a sort of all encompassing one, and I say that because you can stay on the island. There's a whole range of historical and other things to do on the island. You can rent a couple of the cottages, I believe.
Yes, yeah. No, I guess some people, I guess it depends on where you live, about whether you see it
as remote.
Wahesians wouldn't see it as remote, but some people in town might. But no, there's lots to do on the island, like exactly what you say, Greg, with accommodation and things that people can do. And also it's a really nice, it's not an island that's very steep, so it's really easy for people that might not be as physically able or people with families to get out and have a good stay and a good weekend. And it's really popular with boaties as well.
Yeah. Not a bad point, since you mentioned boaties, to remind Waiheke folk that boats are, in a way, a way that pests and predators can travel around the Gulf.
Yep.
And so if you're taking a boat to Rotorua, what's your message for those boaties?
Well, probably leave your pet rats and stoats at home. It would be a really good one.
Yeah. Even pet dogs, right?
Yeah. Well, I think, people like taking their pets away, like cats and dogs and things like that.
Mm.
And there's nothing wrong with that as long as they act responsibly when they've got them on boats and they know, they know where they can take them ashore and where they can't take them ashore.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And people might like to know that in May of this year, we were catching kiwi on the island and we caught two birds right down on the beach at Ladies Bay.
Wow.
And kiwi are very, very susceptible to dogs.
Yes, they are.
They've got a very strong scent, so dogs can pick up on them really quickly. So that's why we're very strict on not allowing dogs ashore on Rotorua, because it would be devastating for us, but it would also be devastating for the dog owner if it was found that their dog had, caught and killed a kiwi.
Absolutely. I'll come back to kiwi in a second, Joe, but takahe, tieke, which is, of course, the saddleback, popokotia, which is the whited, skinks, shore skinks, moko skinks, patiki, the brown teal, which a lot of Waiheke people will only have really seen if they've been out to the barrier or other places down in the South Island. The idea of having brown teal what's a stone's throw from Waiheke is very exciting.
Yes, it is. Yeah, that they're, I kind of refer to them as stoat chocolates because they're quite a, they're a species that live low on the ground and they're like a canary in a coal mine.
Yeah.
For species like stoat. So a lot of what we have on Rotorua is not present on places like Waiheke because there are things like stoats there. So
yeah.
Rotorua kind of offers a really neat opportunity to people from Waiheke to nip over and just kind of see what you know, what could be on Waiheke.
I would really love to come back in a second to talk about just how people on Waiheke can get involved, and it is just a stone's throw away, and there is a ferry from Auckland that stops at Orapu and takes you over to Rotorua, so we'll talk about that in a sec. But on the Kiwi issue, I think Waiheke people are very surprised. I personally think we should be a bit better informed than that, but I've spoken to some Waiheke people this week and in previous weeks, which was part of what prompted me to see if you guys could come on the show to talk about Rotorua, was that a lot of Waiheke folk aren't that clear just how many islands surrounding us now have kiwi on them. And of course, they're not the only bird we're concerned about, but they're iconic, they're flightless, they're vulnerable, we love them in our hearts. Very few of us have probably seen them in the wild, and yet here are kiwi on islands Motuhi, Motutapu, Rotorua, all around Waiheke Island, and in fact Ponui, which is a privately owned farming island just south of Rotorua. So can you tell us how the kiwi translocation project works? Because as I understand it, Rotorua is a nursery of some sort that helps feed Coromandel and other places with these wonderful kiwi chicks.
Sure, yeah. So we're really grateful to Auckland Zoo that helped us get kiwi to the island, and Kiwis for Kiwi and Thames Coast Coromandel Kiwi. So what Rotorua does is it acts as a nursery for young kiwi chicks. Eggs get taken from the wild down in Thames and either go to the Auckland Zoo or Rainbow and Fairy Springs down in Rotorua. And when the little chicks hatch or in at a certain size, they get brought to Rotorua. And we grow them on until they're about 1,200 grams. And they either go back to Coromandel or they go to Motutapu Island. Uh-huh. And it's a very good program for these islands, because they don't have predators, and they're, you know, the insects and invertebrates in the, you know, in the ground are very, very rich, because there are no rats and things to predate upon, those sorts of things. So the kiwi on Rotorua are very, very healthy chicks when we send them off. So it's a very good way of increasing kiwi populations in other places.
And in the long term, that would be significant over, say, the next 50 to 100 years. You know, to have places like Rotorua, we might be able to get kiwi back onto mainland places, assuming that there are, you know, safe places for them. And so this isn't just about filling up the islands, but actually a resource for the entire nation.
Yeah. Well, there are lots of places on the mainland where there are good kiwi populations.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why we've got Predator Free 2050 and that whole movement, to try and increase you know, opportunities for these rare and endangered iconic species to be in our mainland environments where you know, where they naturally should be and used to be, but also to try and make them a little bit more accessible to people, you know, because you sort of quite clearly said in talking to me this morning that a lot of people don't know what species we've got and what places, and a lot of that is because they're not in places that are easy for people to see them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why we want to try and change it. But the Kiwi program is also a really good example of how effective communities of ordinary people can be doing extraordinary things, you know, like saving our kiwi. The kiwi program is largely dependent on a lot of community groups all the way across New Zealand, helped by the Kiwis for Kiwi and the Department of Conservation.
Yeah.
So it's a significant community restoration program that's been very successful.
You talk about Predator 2050, and I understand you're also part of Te Korowai o Waiheke, which is a sort of all-encompassing group that holds together a number of conservation and ecological approaches. And we have, too, an ambitious goal of having Waiheke predator free. Do you think it's realistic to get kiwi on Waiheke one day?
Absolutely. I think it's really nice to be able to talk to Waiheke people on the radio, because a lot of the reason that Te Korowai o Waiheke is has been funded is solely because of the extraordinary work that a lot of people have been doing in the Waiheke community for a long time. You know, there's an amazing number of people that have been doing a lot of work.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we're able to eradicate stoats from Waiheke and deal with rats, which will help Waiheke and also stop swimmers going to Rotoroa, there's no reason why we couldn't have kiwi and many more, you know, rare and iconic species on Waiheke in time.
That's an incredibly encouraging vision, and I think the sort of, I mean, if we can get some momentum up, it may start with the small uninhabited islands, and then that momentum can come through to places. Well, because I think it's lovely to have isolated sanctuary islands, but how wonderful to have an island where people live and have lived always almost, and engaging with you know, communities of wildlife that weren't here once and are coming back. The idea that nature and people can coexist, that's what I'm trying to get my fingers on.
Yeah. Well, everything is connected to everything else, and you can't separate people from nature. So that's, you know, that's another reason that we've got Predator Free 2050 now, is it recognises that, you know, we've moved from just, we've been incredibly successful eradicating predators off unoccupied islands. And now our challenge is to try and eradicate them from occupied islands. And Waiheke is in a fabulous position to be at the forefront of that, because it's surrounded by predator-free islands. And by removing predators from Waiheke, we've got a huge opportunity to, you know, help other islands and prevent predators getting back to them, but also enable species from those other islands, once they get to populations that are too big for those islands, they've got another island to come to, being Waiheke.
Wonderful vision. But in terms of people and nature coexisting, in fact, today you've got, I think, 50 volunteers out on the island helping weed some beach plantings. The planting's already taken place, and now there's volunteers out there, even as we speak, gently releasing the weeds from around the sand grasses so that those sand grasses continue to thrive. And then there'll be a planting day in 2 weeks, is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yep. No, we've got a fabulous lady and Angela Bishop, who does all of our sort of community and advocacy projects, and Kevin and Tony on the island, who are really good with volunteers.
Yeah.
And we really appreciate the people that give up a day to come out to the island and do things like weeding on our beaches and planting and things like that. And it's a hugely important part of what we do on Rotoroa.
And so I wonder if some Waiheke people feel that they would have to go to Auckland to get involved and therefore don't. But I'd like to point out to listeners this morning that if you would like to be involved in volunteering on Rotoroa Island, the ferry stops at Oropew, is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yep. It's just about a 10 or a 15-minute trip from Oropew over to Rotoroa.
Yeah.
But if people want to take their own boats over, as long as they leave their pets at home, they are more than welcome to come over in their own boats as well.
Yeah, well, that's an excellent point too, and many people in Waiheke do have boats, and many of us don't, so there is a ferry or your own boat. And just before we wrap it up, Joe, we've been talking about the ecology experience for visitors and so on, and the strong history of the island, but there are some amazing, and I appreciate this probably isn't your area entirely, but there are some amazing, and it's probably I should talk to Angela about this, but you've got things like night astrophotography classes, you know, these opportunities for people to get off Waiheke or off the mainland over there in New Zealand and get out to Rotoroa for all sorts of different experiences.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, no, we're building on the fabulous work that the ladies have been doing out on the Great Barrier with
the Dark Sky Sanctuary.
Sky Talks, and, you know, Waiheke and Rotoroa are sufficiently far away from the big smoke of Auckland that you get amazing night sky, so we think that there'll be a lot of interest from people to go out and have a look and, you know, understand our night sky. So, those opportunities are out there as well. And the other thing that we do is we do guided walks as well in the weekends.
Oh, yeah.
So that's another opportunity for people to come over and learn about Rotoroa and the Hauraki Gulf.
I think one thing I've realised from talking to you this morning, Joe, is that these island sanctuaries aren't places that you shouldn't go because you might disturb the wildlife. They're actually places you should go and get involved in.
Yeah, well, I think there are places that you can go and get involved in, but just simply going out there and going for a swim or going sailing or walking, you know, that's an intimate experience with nature as well.
Yeah.
And we, later on in the year, we will be, we're likely to be releasing more kiwi chicks on the island. So Angela works really hard to get that message out to the community, and we have open days so that people can come and participate in those kiwi releases and see what a kiwi chick looks like.
Oh, and that would be amazing.
For a lot of people, that's their first and only chance that they'll ever get to see a kiwi.
Absolutely. Oh, Joe Ritchie, thank you so much for your time this morning.
You're welcome.
Good luck for all the wonderful work you're doing out there.
Thank you very much.
Hopefully we'll get a few Waiheke people over there to join you.
Awesome.
Kia ora. Thanks again.
Yeah, bye-bye.